Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, July 12th, 2017. With me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
Glad you're here. And Jeff Butts, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. And hi, John.
Hi, Jeff.
And welcome to TDO After Dark. Anyhow,
hey, folks, in case you were wondering, this is not the John and Kelly show this week.
No, but you know, we appeal to all kinds of audiences.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is iMazing, which is pretty awesome. And we'll talk about them in a little bit. But what I want to talk about right now is this video that people have been looking at and talking about recently. And it's not so much the video itself, but everything that surrounds it. And so what I'm talking about is this video that we ran on Mac Observer. Was it yesterday, I believe, day or two ago? And basically what happened is Brian found this video of University of Washington researchers showing how they could fake a video of someone talking and make it look totally believable. And so what they did was they took video or recordings of President Obama speaking at different events and then made their own fake video where it looks like he's saying those things in this specific video. And that in and of itself, it's a clever way of demonstrating how something works and doing it in a way where you're not like setting something up where people are like, holy crap, what's going on here? But what it shows is that we now have a technology that's advancing to the point where you can make anyone say anything and have it potentially be believable. And go ahead.
Back the bus up for a minute.
Okay.
They took video from different events that Trump spoke at.
Obama spoke at.
Obama, I'm sorry, Obama. And then merged them together.
Mm-hmm.
Or put them in a library where they can be accessed.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't Obama end up looking like Max Headroom?
No, not in this case.
No?
What they did was they took these videos, and instead of like grabbing individual words out of each one, they took a phrase. And so you get these complete sentences, these complete thoughts, and then there's another one that follows that, and it comes across, except for the fact that his voice is not the same now as it was in the much earlier video that they used.
Mm-hmm.
It's uncanny how realistic the video of him talking.
I take it they also constructed a lip sync in the constructed video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's not like you just have this talking head and these words that are coming out and not matching it like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. It's it looks like he's speaking. And it looks surprisingly real. I mean, it's
interesting.
Yeah. It's one of those things where if you don't realize what you're watching, you may not know that this is a synthetic video. Because it's not really him sitting there, and it's not really him saying those words at that time.
Hmm.
But if you know, you can look very closely, and you can pick places where this is not perfect.
Okay.
But keep in mind, this is a demonstration of what this technology can be capable of.
Okay.
Scary.
I'm going to have to check that out, because I'll admit, I've been head down in Hackintosh and Linux stuff for the past 3 days, and I've barely come up for air. And it's time for me to catch up with what's going on in the real world.
Well, every now and then I'll reach down, grab you by the scruff of the neck, pull you up for a breath of air, and say, "Whoa, look at this crazy video."
Yeah, I think you're going to have to, because I get carried away.
I can totally do that.
Jeff, that University of Washington research project brought back a memory.
Oh, do tell.
Well, listeners may recall that I founded Peelings magazine for the Apple II in the 80s.
Yeah, you know, I was reading that magazine back in the 80s.
Cool.
Yeah.
In the April 1983 issue, which was the April Fool issue, I wrote an article about this new product. It was a combination of hardware and software. Companies were selling these add-on 68,000 processors that you could plug into an Apple II bus and offload operations to the much faster 68,000, which came to be in the Macintosh later. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this article about a company in Phoenix on 1 April Street. People didn't catch on to that. Mm-hmm. They called the Scintillator. And what it was a hardware and software combination where you had a video camera pointed at the TV and it would digest a television episode that would digest the appearance of the characters, the backgrounds, the settings, and so on. Mm-hmm. And then you would write a script, a new script for a TV show as a conventional television script. And this software-hardware combination would combine your script with its archived video synthesis and create a new episode that was indistinguishable from broadcast. And in the example I wrote, I had an episode of MASH where I had Hawkeye pull a .45 out and shoot Colonel Powder. Mm-hmm. And you weren't able to tell the difference between... I talked about how I visited the so-called office in this April Fool article in Phoenix, and I watched the episode that was constructed, and it was indistinguishable from a broadcast episode of the TV show. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it all up about how this product was going to go on sale on the 1st of April, 1984, or something like that. And it got huge response, and people were going crazy reading about this. And one professor wanted to teach a class on it, and we had all sorts of inquiries, and people wanted to know more. And we had to tell them all. And I got the phone staff got really mad at me, the people who were on the answering the Peelings telephone line, because the phone was ringing off the hook, and they got pissed off at me because I had written this article. And so when I heard about this University of Washington thing, I thought, you know, it won't be long before, you know, you take, and they've done essentially that, taken a script, married it to a video environment, and produced a video. It only took 34 years to achieve
to catch up to
I wrote about.
April Fool's prank?
Yeah.
You know, John, that's amazing. You know, we give all kinds of credit to Star Trek for coming up with ideas that later came to fruition in modern technology. And you did the same thing back in the 80s.
Well, thank you.
That's awesome.
I just love that people didn't pick up on the clues that you put in that this was an April Fool's article.
I think they were so wowed by the concept of the technology. And also, these were the Apple II days. We were naive about what capabilities were required. And people thought, well, the 6502 is so slow and so lame. Surely this phenomenal new Motorola 68000
right,
with its fantastic processing power will be able to do all this video processing.
Sure.
People just didn't know.
It's, man, I wish that I had read that article when it came out. Because I read a lot of stuff from Peelings, and I don't remember that article. But yeah, of course, back then we were far more naive as users about what was going to be capable with the technology we had and the technology that was just coming out. But still.
So now we're going to have Safari plugins that detect the problems with the video. As you said before, you know, find these little video flaws that give us a sign that this might be a fake video.
Yeah.
Technology wars.
Well, here's where I see this going. as speech synthesis gets better and better, you'll be able to write a script for someone to say, and then have images of them and video of them that the software can then use to replicate a model of the person, and now you can make them say anything you want, and it will look as if that person is really saying whatever it is.
Well, you know, there might be a way out of this. I've read stories in the past, and it wasn't recently, about movie stars copywriting their look so that you can't do animated sequences with their likeness unless you have copyright permission. It may come to that. The politicians may have to copyright their look and then voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I could see where that would be easier to deal with as an entertainer, and more difficult to deal with as a politician, because at what point do you say, well, you know, you're infringing on free speech?
Well, they write the laws, so they'll protect themselves, right?
Oh yeah, obviously.
Of course, but it'll end up in court. Mm-hmm. And yeah, anyhow,
fun times.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing the videos that that people produce that make me look smarter. Because I'm sure that's exactly what everyone has in mind for this technology. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is iMazing. And version 2.3 is out, so if you haven't updated yet, go get your update. It adds in some cool features. One thing you can do with iMazing, and this predates 2.3, but it totally is worth mentioning. You know, I've talked before about how iMazing, it's an application you can put on your Mac or your PC to manage the content that's on your iOS devices. So you can do backups and copy files off, put files on. With the backups that you can do, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that if you have a backup where you know that there's some piece of content in that backup that you really, really don't want to go back onto a device, like maybe that you know you have some sort of corrupt data on the device, or you know that you want to do a restore, but you want to make sure it doesn't have the specific app and the data that goes with it for whatever reason, okay, no problem. You can actually go in and edit your backups from your iOS devices, that the backups that iMazing makes, and you can pull out the stuff that you don't want to have restored. And you can build, I'll call it a composite backup to restore from. So if you have stuff from like two different backups that you want to combine into one and then restore that, no problem. You can take the pieces from the two backups, build a new one, and then restore that. I just love the power that you have with backups in iMazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's one of those things where a lot of people wouldn't realize they have that level of control. They're just glad to be able to have this really stable, solid backup system. And they don't think beyond just getting that good backup and being able to restore from it. So anyhow, what you guys can do if you want to check out this and all the other great features that are part of iMazing, go to their website, and it's imazing.com/TDO, imazing.com/TDO. And when you're there, you can download a version, try it out for free. And when you're ready to buy, then just go back to that link, imazing.com/TDO, and you get 20% off. And that discount is good on a single license, a multi-computer license, and a family license. So 20% off, great way to save some money on a utility that is totally worth buying at full price. imazing.com/TDO. Thank you, iMazing, for being our sponsor. Okay, so the other
question.
Ahead. Uh-huh.
I've been running the beta for so long that I can't remember. Does 2.3 include iMazing Mini?
Yeah, actually it does.
Okay, yeah. So you've got Time Machine for your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep, you totally have Time Machine for your iPhone. And yes, iMazing Mini is part of iMazing 2.3.
That's what I thought.
Yep, you are right. Okay, so the other thing that I want to talk about today is coding C++ on the Mac. And here's where I'm going with this. John, you spent a crazy amount of time figuring out and then explaining how to get everything set up so that you can run C++, or you can code in C++ on your Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Why would someone want to do this?
C++ is not a language that some people were particularly fond of. because it seems to have been superseded by Java. And when, as Mac people, we tend to think about Objective-C and Swift in the process of using Xcode to build our favorite Mac OS, iOS, tvOS, GUI apps.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there is a strong contingent of C++ in the government and military and commercial programming. So it turns out that in education, higher education, when people are thinking about learning languages that they can press into service in the workplace, they may think about Swift as a language, as a standalone language for some development, but it's primarily thought of in terms of building Apple applications in the environment of Xcode. And in an academic environment where you're trying to prepare students to go out into the real world and go, you know, go to work for Charles Schwab or General Electric and write Java code or C++ code in a commercial environment, you need a platform to do that. And what triggered me a little bit on this was a comment I saw a while back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't even write C++ anymore in Xcode, which was wrong. And it just kind of simmered in my brain for a while. So finally, I had the time to write an article geared primarily towards students who are learning C++ in college and planning on a career in professional software development in either C++ or Xcode. Because after all, if you do go to work for a corporation, you're not going to be writing Objective-C. You're going to be writing Java or C++, depending on the corporation's needs. So I thought it would be good to put together an article on this sort of besmirched language from time to time, which some people hate and some people love, for the student who's trying to learn C++ and they have a Mac, and they know they can do it in Visual Studio, but they have a MacBook Air, they're in college, and they want to know how to do this. So I put together five good ways to do it. Turns out there's more, but I picked five good ways to do it. And it turns out you can write C++ code in Apple's Xcode IDE, after all. It's not hard to do. You normally work in an environment when you're learning code snippets where you write command line code, what's called standard in, standard out, where you write C++ code and you write it to the standard out and you see text, as opposed to building a, you know, Macintosh-like GUI app with windows and mice and icons,
right,
control.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that with Xcode. I think you can even write a full-blown GUI app in C++, but I didn't go into that because that's not the goal of what you're doing when you're learning the language. You're trying to write like 10 to 15 or 25 lines of code to learn how to do objects or to do how to input or output or variables or lists or things like that.
So my take on this is that it comes down to what I experienced when I was taking computer programming courses in college all those years ago, which was I had this elite idea of what I should be coding in. And it turns out the real world had completely different expectations. So mm-hmm. I ended up having to learn Fortran.
There is a great Fortran package from a company called Absoft. If you're a scientist, I recommend the Absoft package. It's the latest and greatest. It's a package that has its own compilers and its own development environment. And, you know, in the heydays, when Apple was focusing on scientists in Unix back in the early 2000s, we got to know that you could program in just about any language you wanted on a Macintosh. It comes with Ruby. It comes with Python.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's right Python 2.7, but it's not hard to install Python 3.5. And I've written an article about that. And you can do the scripting language. You can do all the bash. You can do all the Unix shells, bash and C shell.
Sure.
Whatever you need. You can do it just about any language you want. But it turns out, because Apple's focused more on the consumer, some things have kind of Apple's drifted away from some things. They've drifted away from X Windows. There's no longer a default install of Java. And so if you want to run, say, Eclipse, which is very popular in commercial and educational work, which is an IDE, an integrated development environment for writing different languages. Eclipse is written in Java, so is NetBeans, so you have to install Java first.
You have to install the JRE first.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you may have lingering concerns about the security of Java. And so you have to kind of wrap your head around the different ways to do it. You want to install a virtual machine and install a full-blown version of Linux, say, and have a complete working environment in Linux? Or do you want to just work on the command line for a while? I mean, use VI to write your beginner code in C++ and then compile it with G++ or LLVM on the command line. So there's all these different things you have to do. And it turns out to be not really very easy. So I created this article of signposts, not detailed tutorial, but just sort of like, here's the path forward and how you can get started with C++ on your Mac.
So we're kind of out of time, but Jeff, I know you have some experience at the college level with teaching coding.
Yeah, I've taught C++, and I mean, really, the importance of C++ anymore isn't really so much. I mean, yeah, it's still used heavily in government and some corporate environments, but the goal when we would teach C++ was more to introduce students to the idea of object-oriented programming.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they could go on to learn other object-oriented programming languages after the fact. And my students hated Visual Studio. So they loved the opportunity to do anything they could in Xcode or even just as command line junkies. Mm-hmm. Using G++ or GCC.
All right, that's quite a statement about Visual Studio when your students are like, you know, I think I'll just use the command line, thanks anyhow.
But these programming environments are hard. You have to learn things. You have to learn details. You have to find things. You have to open up Windows. You have to learn how to select your debugger. You have to learn how to compile and build your code. You have to learn how to debug it. And to build this environment is a bit tedious, and it's quite satisfying after you do it, but it's not a no-brainer to fire up and configure your development environment. It takes a while.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
All right. Hey, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. And I'll make sure that there's a link to John's piece in today's show notes. If you're curious about what it takes to dive into coding in languages like C++, John's piece is great. And I know it was a crazy amount of work, but I'm glad you took the time to write it.
Thanks.
John, thank you for being here today.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yep. And Jeff, thank you for being here too.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And thank you to iMazing for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, iMazing.com/TDO, and get your copy of iMazing for Mac or Windows for 20% off. It's a fantastic utility. I'm so glad it's on my computer. And I think it needs to be on yours too. So go pick it up. iMazing.com/TDO. Listeners, thank you for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.